Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
Welcome back. It is Wednesday, high noon on the West Coast, and it is an absolute gorgeous day. It's blue sky, as always. In the fly high land of living, it is always a beautiful, beautiful day. And I welcome all of you that are out there in listener land. We, as always, have some really incredible stuff going on. Today's show is titled Addicted to Flying. And we called it that because I have a good friend, Susan Lake, who is here with us. And she is a counselor. She is an expert in meditation and mindfulness. And she was recently on a panel discussion, and I had the pleasure of being there for that panel discussion. And it was very, very interesting to me, and in that some of Susan's work is in the field of addiction recovery. Now, obviously, not everybody that's in the audience is involved in the addiction world or the recovery from addiction. But what I find is so applicable to everybody, because we all face that, whether it's food or sunlight or flying or whatever, we have preferences and things that we want to do. Sometimes those preferences take hold of us, and we kind of get sidelined by that. And often that turns into, or can turn into, an addiction. Now, one of the things that I found really interesting at the panel discussion was TJ and I, Susan, what was TJ's last name?
Woodward.
Yeah, he had a lot of interesting things to say. But one of the things he said was that very often we are treating the symptom as if it was alcohol, when in reality, alcohol was the solution, or drugs are the solution to an interesting challenge that people are facing, and that we need to take a look at the background and the underlying cause of that addiction to really keep them from recurring. And so with that, I want to introduce Susan Lake. Susan Lake is here. She's out in the tropics somewhere today. And she is joining us on the Laura Meeks Show. So Susan, say hi and tell us a little bit about your background and where you're coming from.
Hi, Laura. Welcome. I'm here in Hawaii. And on my beachfront property, as you can see, for me, the background of where I came from was the performing arts. And I went to college initially for arts and education, and I fulfilled that career. And towards the latter part of my career time, I became the choreographer for a large dance company. And I specifically remember there was a time where I became very aware that for the time spent with dancers on the dance floor, with music and movement, what inspired us and how we were so mindful of what we were doing, that during those 2 hours, nothing else mattered. We were totally focused. And what was the result of that focus? So my interest began with dancers, and how do dancers handle the pressure of, and why are we nervous about getting onto the dance floor and performing? What scares us? What are the insecurities that come up? Why do we feel we don't measure up? What is the fear that comes in? And I became very interested in the study of the mind, and I've been and meditator myself for over 49 years.
49 years? So you're 51 now?
This is what you look like. And I began to work in the field of addiction. And common to all of us is that sense of what was the trauma really in all of our lives that result in us doing something to push it down, to cover it up, to mask it, to make us feel better. And how does meditation and mindfulness help us to understand how does the mind work? And how can I take control over what I'm thinking and shift that over time to where it no longer is the predominant focus in my mind and I see it for what it is?
Yeah. Now, let me interrupt you for a sec. One of the things that I want you to go back to when you first started working with the patients that were involved in addiction. And you had told me a number of times about how interesting you found it that there you were working in meditation with this group of people. And all of a sudden they're like, wow, I've never done this before. And it seems so powerful. And all of a sudden this realization that maybe we should do more of this.
You know, that's a great question, because if we all took the time to stop and think about, we spend most 80% of our life, maybe even slightly higher, being curious about everyone else. What is everybody else thinking? But we hardly spend any time figuring out, what about me? What do I know about me? How do I take care of me? What do I really like? So it is my experience that meditation, it allows us to see what we're thinking, but it allows us to take a look at ourselves, maybe sometimes for the first time, and being aware of what are we thinking versus what does everybody else expect of me? And I believe that's a very aha moment for people, because you initially think, I've never had that experience before. I feel different. I am rested. I actually had an experience of an awareness I don't consciously have. And so I feel that that's almost a marker as to how much we do not know about ourselves.
Well, talk to me about, so here's some new people coming into your class. They have no experience in meditation. And honestly, although we are on Transformation Talk Radio, and I'm sure that there's a bunch of people that are going, yeah, meditation, affirmation now, yeah. I've done all that. One of the things I find is that this is a nuanced thing, this meditation. There are lots and lots of different ways to meditate. And so talk to me first about somebody who hasn't meditated before. Where should they start?
Well, in the arena that I currently work in, we have two, let's say, different kind of situations. The one kind of situation is where you willingly start to go and investigate, where can I go and learn to meditate? What group can I belong to? And so we willingly decide to do that. We've made that decision and we go. In the case for me, very oftentimes in a program of scheduling of therapeutic services, one of the things we do is go to the practitioner of spiritual education, which would be me. And so as you're sitting there with people in the class with you, there are those that have no idea why they have to be here. They have preconceived ideas about, gee, I hope we're not going to start to talk about this. And meditation can be almost unnerving, a little bit frightful to people who are going through certain physical detoxing or challenges. And now they feel like I'm going to be asked to do this thing. What if I can't, or what if I don't want to? So initially, in a class for meditation in that arena, We are not being forced to do anything. We're going to participate on this very simple level of which you can or cannot participate in. And that is mostly a very relaxing, calming kind of meditation that doesn't challenge us that way, but versus soothes us.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that you did during the panel was like a 3-minute guided meditation. And one of the things I found early on, and I've shared this story with you, but I'll share it with the audience. One of the things that I thought was kind of funny in my life in meditation is that I got to a spot where I felt like I really needed to learn how to meditate. And I had met Monica Evan, who is out here in the Palm Desert area. And she and I were in a class together, and she said, "Hey, come on over to my house. I every Wednesday I have a group that comes out to meditate." And I thought, well, again, more fun to me in a group. Now, I think one of the things that I would aim people at is that some people like to do it alone. Some people like to do it at night. Some people like to do it in the morning. Some people like to do it in groups. Some guided meditations. There's a lot of different things that we can talk about. But in this particular case, I went over to Monica's house, and there was like 6-8 people sitting in her living room. Got like 3 or 4 on the couch and a couple extra chairs. We're all in a nice little circle. And she turns on a CD and says, "Okay." And she did like a prayer to get into it. And then, "Okay, let's go." And I really had no idea whether this was like a 5-minute or a 5-hour thing. And so everybody just closes their eyes. And so I close my eyes and I'm listening to the CD. And I can tell, well, there's the first song, and that's like 3 minutes. And so here's the second song, and there's 3 minutes. And then I'm on the third song, and then I kind of like open one eye. It's like, "Hey, is anybody out there? It's like, are you guys still doing this?" And my first ever meditation, 1 hour of just basic silence. Now, I'm not recommending that that's a great way to get into meditation. It worked okay for me, and I have since tried and work on a lot of different things. But I'm guessing 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, kind of the essence, and I'll let you reflect on this, kind of the essence of a lot of your work, especially in the addiction world, is you're taking people that are going through trauma, and usually I think people get to meditation when we've tried all these other solutions, like, "Okay, well, I'll try meditation." We probably should have tried this first. But I like to think of it as a kind of calming the monkey mind in order to get in touch with who you are. And so it seems to me that a lot of the good results that you've had within the recovery programs is you're taking people who are going to therapy and they're doing this, that, and the other thing, and they're in sober living, and now they're in your class, and it's kind of like, "Hey, you know, amongst all the other things you do this week, hey, here's calmness." So maybe you talk to me about what meditation is for you and how that ties into mindfulness. Is one part of the other?
In the how I use meditation in the work that I do is to in the mindfulness practice is to experience what is the mind doing all the time, and it is always doing something. It is focusing on the past or the present, and it grasps onto an idea or something comes in the mind, and then we start to develop that thought and have feelings and emotions around it. And so in mindful meditation, we never ignore the thoughts, but as they come into our mind, we learn how to allow them to dissipate, and how we come back to our focal point, whatever that may be during meditation. Could be the heart, could be a part of the body, could be the breath. So that gradually over time, we're dissipating those thoughts so that we don't hang on to them and stay stuck to them and turn it into a morbid reflection that can be detrimental. We don't want that to happen. And once we can see how we are thinking, how we can dissipate the thoughts, not stay there, allow them to pass, that's when the real clearing and awareness happens of who and what we might be beyond just that continual story that goes on in our mind about what happened and what's going to happen.
Okay, well, and so within the recovery, one of the things that we've seen is that when you're involved in the recovery process, it seems like the initial 30 days, you're going to detox from whatever drug or alcohol you're on, and then you're going to go into some sort of program to recover from that so that you can get back out in the world. And I know from your experience that some of the things that have happened as you've gotten involved in this is you realize that there needs to be a broader scope. Yes, detoxing and perhaps medications can help, but a lot of your work now is expanding from the Western, let's take alcohol out of your blood and now you're okay, to more of a whole human East-West blend. How do you see why add the Eastern philosophies into this?
Well, that's the question of the century, Laura. With more and more interest in meditation and Eastern practices, we've now become more and more aware of the benefit of complementary health to complement Western medicine, in that if therapy and psychology is healing the mind, then the spiritual side is another big part of our healing, which is what the Eastern medicine really addresses in that manner. It becomes a part of what we can learn about ourselves and what we can maintain on our own. I believe, Laura, that one of the things that's very obvious is many times we think right away that we're going to take care of our addiction and hopefully address our trauma in a certain pattern. But when we bring in the practice of meditation, we open the door to understanding the greater self, greater self-realization. We connect ourselves to a bigger universal self that gives us the opportunity to examine our own purpose. And I believe that the importance is that we need to continue the education program so that it isn't something we just do for 6 weeks or 4 weeks or 6 months, but we make that a practice so that we can keep our lives moving forward and we can keep evolving and enjoy a better life through understanding how the mind works and how we can stop certain thought patterns that arise all the time.
Right. Now, part of the thing that we know already from the recovery, again, is, there's detox and then you're into AA and therapy is an important piece of that. I think that mindfulness and meditation can be a real additive to therapy, in that I think that one of the challenges of therapy is the therapist says, how do you feel about this? And what do you think about that? And a lot of times that's not stuff that you've really thought about or really even thought about deeply. And I find, you tell me, do you find
here's what meditation gives the therapist. It allows whoever is meditating, the meditator, to calm down, become tranquil. And that's the state when we're ready to talk at a different level. And that's the biggest attribute, because the psychologists and the psychiatrists their role is such that you are inquiring. And so the more tranquil we can be, the more and the more state of calm we are going to be more receptive to a conversation about certain things. I have had clients in my classroom who are still detoxing and are not able to sit still, who need to walk around during the class, who will come right out and say, I cannot close my eyes for 5 or 10 minutes. That's not going to happen. And one of the things that's really important for people to know is this. You do not have to do anything. Meditation is, there's no pass fail for meditation. It is unique and individual to everyone. So whether you are able to close your eyes for 10 seconds, whether you are able to close your eyes for 5 minutes, it's a start. And I believe that we have to be accepting on that level as well, so that now we don't compound the problem with, now I have to learn something else. Rather, it becomes something we look forward to, that the understanding that we gain from meditation, the feeling we get when we go inside and get to know ourselves within, that awareness within, that is the bigger part of ourselves, is revealed. And that meditation actually becomes something you look forward to do.
Yeah, well, and again, I think one of the things that has helped me, and obviously part of the metaphysical world is totally involving changing your thinking and thinking patterns mm-hmm. about what is going on, what you're perceiving the world to be, and to actually make changes to your thinking pattern, you first have to think about what you're thinking about. You have to know what's going on. One of the things
very often people are not even aware. You know, it is happening, it is part of us. But like I mentioned earlier, when was the last time you actually took the time to get to know yourself? And that's where we stand with meditation. I am now starting to understand about myself.
Well, and I think that's such an important part. In my world, we call it notice what you're noticing or notice your thinking, becoming aware, perceive your self-perception to understand what you're thinking. And so much of that deals with you really can't change anything until you know what you are thinking. And by meditating and understanding what you're thinking, part of what you're gaining access to is part of your belief structure, part of how you react to the world. One of the things that, and we're kind of coming up towards the break, so I kind of want to start down this road and kind of hint at what we're going to talk about, because one of the things that I find very important in whether we're talking about addiction, meditation, mindfulness, is that we are programmed as kids. We come into this world with kind of in psychological terms, a blank slate. There's a certain portion of our brain that's a blank slate that we're learning, and our parents are going to teach us about how the world works, and then all of a sudden, those little tapes are engaged in our head and are running our behaviors, and like you say, very often we don't know what tapes are really running. And very often, you know, people say, well, I never said that. I never do that. It's like, well, let me play the video. Yes, you do. You do. You know, this is one of those things where often your friends are going, oh, you do that all the time. It's like, oh, I never do that. It's like, oh, you always do that. It's just like, wow, that's part of self-awareness. So part of what we're going to talk about when we come back, we're going to tease them a little bit, because you've had a recent experience where you've had some of your old patterns come up, and I want to go through that story so that they can understand what that looks like and so how we can become aware of those. So stick with us. Susan Lake will be right back. You're listening to The Laura Meek Show, and we will be back with that news story. See you soon.
The Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Are you done being afraid to jump into the life that's waiting for you? Are you ready for a real shift? I invite you to tune in every Tuesday with me, Tracy L., on the Tracy L. Clark Show, where we will teach you how to live your extraordinary life. At 8 a.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio, where I will provide the tools and the steps needed to help you transcend perceived limitations and move forward with an extraordinary life. For more information, visit me at TracyLClark.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Back. This is Laura Meeks. We're on the Laura Meeks Show. And if you're just tuning in at the half, we have Susan Lake, who is masterful at meditation and mindfulness. And we're talking, her background came from, which I always love, the part of the human experience. So you're bringing in this whole art world that you started out in the field of dance and art, and you're bringing all that creativity into a land now where you're captivating the 40 plus years you've been meditating and pulling that all together. That's kind of the fun part about this latest section of my growth is that I have a lot of tools that I've gathered over the years as I've gone on my journey that we can play in. Real quick, Susan Lake, there is a way to get a hold of you. Let's see if I get this right. You're on Facebook at SL, which is that's short for Susan Lake, and then Evergreen. So there is an Evergreen project. So if you want to connect on Facebook at SL Evergreen, then you can connect with Susan Lake. If there's stuff that you would just want to ask her that she doesn't cover today, because we only get her for an hour. Before we went on the break, Susan, we were talking about the power of mindfulness and meditation is, to me, meditation is a tool or a technique, and there are hundreds of different techniques to get into a space where you can connect to yourself and to me, to a greater source energy, so you can kind of connect to some bigger answers. But one of the things we were talking about before the break was is that we all grow up with programming. I mean, we get programmed by our parents, we get programmed by our teachers, by society. Now, even more than ever, I mean, we have television, we have social media. It's almost an incessant barrage of information coming in. And part of the challenge of being in this earth suit with this brain that's up here is that somehow we have to take ourselves out of the picture long enough so that we know who this self is, so that we can then interact with the world in a way that we want to. Now, one of the challenges, I think, as you mature, is that sometimes these tapes that are running in your head are not doing the job that you really want to have done before, you know, anymore. In other words, what worked when you were 15 might not be a great way to react now. And you had a recent experience that I want you to share, where you clearly felt the old tape starting to run and you chose a different direction. Tell us about that.
Well, you're right. One of the things that happens from birth is our parents, our teachers, those around us who nurture us and help us to grow, are continually instilling in us what we should do and how we could live and what is expected of us and what is the consequence of our actions. So most of us grow up trying to achieve what someone else has told us we need to be and we need to look like and we need to do and we need to accomplish and to be valued. And what happens very often is that is exactly what causes us to not be able to respond the way we'd like to, because we don't know anything about ourselves. The society becomes an exhausted society because we're all trying to be something we're not and measure up to a standard we didn't design for ourselves originally anyway. And so our whole lives, we are managing ourselves. There's a very delicate balance, and those of us who cannot, often the solution for a big trauma can be an addiction of some sort. Now, when we decide to take care of ourselves, to learn about ourselves, one of the wonderful things about meditation, mindfulness, is this. If I do it consistently, regularly, over a period of time, I am able to make a shift that allows me no longer to react, but to respond to situations differently and to understand when we feel a button being pushed, what is that? And in this way, we change. I know the story you're referring to, and this is a big example of being in one of those situations. As I said, have done a course, much work on myself as well. And I recently, my family lives in one area and I live in another area about 2-3 hours apart from one another. And I was at a service for a neighbor and who had passed, made their transition. And I wasn't expecting anyone to come. So I sat there with a large group of people and we were visiting, and I suddenly noticed that my family had come into the service without telling me they were coming. And once they did come in, they decided they were going to sit separately from me as well. Now, if I would be in a state where all of my past was governing the way I was going to react at that moment, I could have become very self-absorbed I could have decided this is what happens to me all the time. This is how they treat me. This is a problem with them. See who they are. Through mindfulness, through the understanding of how we think, being aware that that's what I would do, and that's this surveillance I take in my mind when something happens to me, we get to the point where we no longer allow that. When it does come up, we dissipate it quickly, understanding that is not so, because we do not take it personally. It is not about me. It is not happening to me, unless I decide it's happening to me. And this is, you know, we hope to get to the point of equanimity where we allow experiences to happen to us without forming a story around them. And this is typical, very like an obvious story about this is something that can push our button. I could have reacted very differently. But through the practice, we learn how to handle our situations differently. Why is that so important? Because as well as individuals, we are a society of people. And as we behave, we influence all those around us, and we are designing the world in which we live. And so on that level, of course, it becomes a very important part of, let's take a look at how are we going to move forward, and why is this kind of movement so important to all of us?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I liked the story because it was a time where, and we've all been there. In fact, I used to tell my mother and I had some very challenging times, and there were about at least four really clear times where Mom did me wrong, and I had these stories. And I told these stories over and over again because it was like so clear. I was going here, and then she came in, then she did. Why would she do that? Didn't she see what it did to me? And then this happened, and people were like, oh, wow, I can't believe all that happened. But it was funny because after a couple of years after she died, I became aware of the tape that was running. And I'm thinking, man, I'm still telling that story about the wedding, which happened 30 years ago, and Mom's been dead for 2 years. I was like, why am I telling this story? What's the point of that story? And part of what I want to get at is this self-awareness, that the ability to meditate and be mindful of the tapes that are running so that you can change it and put in, install a new tape. And, you know, one of the things I think that happens, and we see this some in addiction, is that people, I think very much like you were saying, grow up in a world where they're trying to please this person, trying to please that person. And, you know, I've got this boss at work, and then I've got my mom in the background, and then Uncle Louie, and you're juggling all these balls, trying to keep them all in the air. And after a while, you think, man, there's no way to do it. The balls start to fall, and then you start, you know, trying to deal with the pain of all of that. When in reality, it could be that if you just asked yourself, who do I want to be? You know, when you go back to that story of where, you know, when I was a kid, I was the quiet one. And so when you get with family, they said, well, oh, don't, you know, aren't you talking a lot? You're usually so quiet. It's like, well, there comes a time in your life, I think, where you have to ask yourself, who do I want to be? Not who should I be? Not what does Mom want me to be, but who do I want to be? And I think part of it,
I think that comes from getting to a state of calmness. Because when you think about it, someone says to you, you have the opportunity now to change your whole entire life. That's big. You know, that might be almost too frightening to even consider. You know, think about, wow, you mean I haven't been myself my whole life? I'm, you know, 50 years old, I haven't been myself my whole life. And I think that when we meditate and we understand that we are just having experiences in a vast sea of awareness that has no experience, it just is an isness, if you will. We in meditation can see and experience that internally by becoming aware of what is happening in the body, of learning how to love ourselves internally. It's that experience. Why is the breath so important? It is the first thing we do and the last thing we do in our lives. The exhaling of breath in the same womb. You are going to breathe in the air. I have just exhaled. Yes, and I am going to you. We are all universal in that way. And so we are really nurturing ourselves, I feel, to a condition to where we are ready to now make some new choices for ourselves.
Yeah, well, and one of the things I wrote down, after you, in this world of trying to please everybody, please my boss, please my partner, please my kids, please, after a while you say, I think people lose sight of who they really are. And I think one of the things that meditation allows you to do is to go to another land where it's just you. And you can talk to yourself. This is another neat meditation tool, is to imagine yourself walking into a room with yourself and having a discussion about what do you want to do. And in my work as a coach, a lot of times the question really boils down to what would you love? What do you want to do? And I wrote this down because I think this may be help you see if this is triggering. If you find yourself asking all your friends, what do you think I should do here? You know, do you think I should divorce my husband? Or do you think I should go to school? Or what do you think? And if you find yourself taking surveys of all your friends and family, then the question is not so much what do they think? Because that to me would be a signal that you're trying to please this endless group of people that would never possibly, you can never please everybody. In fact, it's hard to please one other person. So to me, one of the things that I have found is that once you kind of zone in on who you are and what you want to do, it's amazing how the rest of the world jumps on board with you once you're on your own path. So if you're finding out, if you're asking, I don't know, what should I do? Should I be an accountant? Or what do you think? Should I be an accountant? It's like, stop, meditate, learn some techniques, go into yourself, ask yourself, well, why? You know, one of the tools that I have is I have these little $1 million bills and I hand them to people and say, well, now you have $1 million. What are you going to do with that? It's like, I don't know. I never had $1 million. Like, well, now you do. So what are you going to do? And it starts to spur that idea in your head.
It's we very seldom say to ourselves, what is it that I love to do and have an abounding energy to do? If I could do that, boy, would I be excited about that. That's where it starts. Understanding how we are going to come about saying that, in what kind of an arena we're going to allow ourselves to go there, is part of the journey. And when we are able to say this, when I always like to use the word faith, because having faith to me means that there's a vibrant energy around a knowing that something is so. Sometimes it's unspoken. You almost can't speak it, but there's a vibrant energy that allows you to know some level you're right. And when we can get that level of excitement about something, we are said to have gotten our purpose. We all have come here with a specific gift, something we're extremely good at, but we don't usually take the time to discover that. That is our purpose for our life here, is to do that and do that well. And of course, make that a communal experience for those around us. And that is the trajectory of where our life should go.
It was interesting. I was at a collection of coaches yesterday at a breakfast panel the Chamber of Commerce, and that is often comes up is that that's your gift. Now I want to, but we've only got about 10 minutes left. One of the things I do want to talk about, so in this land of addiction, and we're dealing with recovery and trying to get down to the root cause, in my eye, part of the challenge of that is to try to figure out why we were using drugs and alcohol to solve our problem. So what was the problem that we're trying to cover with this, and using, I think, one of the tools that you are bringing to the table is this challenge or this chance to use mindfulness and the tool of meditation to get to that. Now, one of the things, one of the projects that I know that you're working on, and why, if they want to get a hold of you, you have to go to SL Evergreen, is because you're working on the Evergreen project, which involves what I think you've called the School of Recovery. Tell me about what you're trying to do with that.
Well, for me, working in the field, it became very obvious to me that there needs to be a continuation of the recovery experience. And so I have begun to put into place a school of recovery, if you will, that carries on from where traditional therapy might end. An environment to where we continue to understand the meditative process, how we think, how we use it in our daily life, and to look deep within ourselves to experience, what does spirituality mean to me? How am I demonstrating that in my everyday life that allows me to experience the power of faith in myself because of who I am as the greater self? And again, Laura, bringing it back to the fact that it is not only about us. We are affected. Our feelings, our ideas, or who we are as people is affected by the communities in which we live. So there's a great impact recovery has on, of course, those in addiction. But all of us are in a type of recovery in our life from whatever went before. Once we come to that aha moment of, I would love to know more about me. What about me? What do I love? Who am I here? And how do I fit into the greater picture of my life?
Yeah, well, and I, in so many ways, and kind of what we're talking about in general is we are constantly growing. In my world, you're either growing to a higher level or you're falling to some lower level. It's very rare. I mean, somehow, some way, we think that, you know, if you get to high school, then you can just coast for 70 years and then. And truly, my experience is now you really can't do that. And so whether it's recovery from addictions of any sort, or just you're just trying to live your life to the highest level. In my world, I talk about dreaming, dream on, to figure out what is that thing that you love, and then to fly high, do it as best you can, and then live adventurously. Try a bunch of different things while you're here on this planet. And so part of that is figuring out what is my gift. And I don't think that there is any particular easy way within our culture or within our society where we even really talk about that. So I think the idea of having a school now potentially aimed at the addiction world, but I think it obviously is a bigger to do for anybody. And now, tell me, in the land of my experience, you detox somebody and then they go to sober living, and then I think the follow-on plan is kind of Alcoholics Anonymous or Narc Anonymous or whatever the program is after that, which, talk to me about that. There are some continuing programs like Alcoholics Anonymous, but I think you're aiming at a different spot.
Yeah, I think I sense a need for a new wave, if you will, or a new approach to an elevated new kind of look at an old tradition of meditation, mindfulness, spiritual understanding to allow us now to move into the next generation of what is recovery? What can recovery become? It can become our lifelong process, and that there is an institution of thought and ideas that will allow us to continually move in that direction. One of the things I think we all get hung up about is we're taught that we grow up, we're going to go to school, we're going to get a job. That's what we do. And so many of us feel challenged at the thought of, you mean I'm on a change in midstream? I can do something else that I, what I was as a carpenter, I don't have to be a carpenter for the rest of my life. I think that we open the door to understanding change is good. And that is part of the evolution that we go through as human beings, which is not what a lot of us have been brought up to believe is the idea of the perfect life or the best life we can have. We get stuck. And so this type of school of recovery is about recovery from all of that and how we change it for the better of how are we going to go forward and affect those around us.
Yeah, well, and you know, in the first thing we were talking about the tapes that we learn, and we really do have this culture of, you know, you're gonna in my newly expanded fly high world, you know, I realized that there's just a billion things that you can do in life. Yet, and think back to when you're a kid, you know, God bless kids. I love being around kids because they're just like, you know, I'm going to be an astronaut today and a ballerina tomorrow. It's like, well, wait a second, you're a boy. You can't be a ballerina. I can be a ballerina. I can do it. I mean, kids don't care. They just want to do stuff. And they don't have all these little restrictions about what you can. And sadly, what happens is, you know, as you get older and older, the box gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And then pretty soon you're stuck. And interesting, you know, generationally, you know, in centuries ago, you know, if you were a carpenter, you're a carpenter, your dad's a carpenter, your grandpa's a carpenter, everybody's a carpenter. That's who you were born into. That's what you're going to be. Yeah. You know, we've progressed some, but even in our generation in the 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, there was kind of the thinking that when you ask a kid, what are you going to be when you grow up? Was kind of hinged around the idea that there's one thing you're going to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I know, you came from an incredible world of dance, and then you went into a spiritual and counseling area. I came from a flying world. That's why we have Fly High Living, because I have this whole experience of being in the air, looking down at the world from a much different perspective. And I'm taking what I did in one phase. So think about this. That was my first career. Annie and I had a consulting business for 16, 18 years. That was a second career. Now I'm on a third career. And I think that one of the things that we're learning from all of this is that when you follow your intuition, when you follow your, sometimes people call it the gut feeling of what you want to do, then you're willing to do all the things that it takes. And it becomes successful. You know, so often people say, well, you know, you can't make any money in rock and roll. Well, that's not necessarily true. I know a lot of people have made a lot of money in rock and roll. They say, well, yeah, there's a small percentage. Well, truthfully, this is true for every profession, even flying. The 747 pilots were the only people that really made a lot of money. Everybody else made just barely subsistence flying airplanes. But that didn't stop me from flying airplanes because that was my passion. Mm-hmm. So all of that to say that I think that the value that you bring with mindfulness and meditation to the world of addiction is that brings a whole new possibility into that realm. Sadly, I know you're going to have a hard time believing this, but the hour is up. and so with that, I will remind everybody, if you want to get a hold of Susan S.L. Evergreen on Facebook, at S.L. Evergreen on Facebook. If you need to get a hold of me, flyhighliving.com, and you can email me at Laura@flyhighliving. And with that, that's about as much time as we got. Thank you very much for being here. And for everybody else, we will see you in 2 weeks, Wednesday at high noon on the West Coast, Laura Meeks Show. Come on back. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to the Laura Meeks Show. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.